emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy.
Real.
My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Alta Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Alta Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Alta Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit AltaRush.com, AltaRush.com, A-L-T-E-R, Rush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Alta Rush, A-L-T-E-R, Rush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
Hey, y'all, are you looking for Corolla? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have the dollar. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with vaccine author and researcher Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, now proudly sponsored by the Natural Farm Source in tribute to the late Dr. Mayer Eisenstein. Go to homefirst.com and click on the store button for your source for vitamins A and C and probiotics to stay healthy naturally. We are here Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com/KnowYourRightsHour. 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific times. Proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com. Wednesdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific time. We welcome your calls during the live show. That number is area code 646-478-0772. That number again, area code 646-478-0772. You can call in just to listen by phone or punch 1 and we'll try to get you on the air with your questions or comments. And you can email us during the week. You can email me at attorney@vaccinerights.com and Dr. Tenpenny at drtenpenny@gmail.com. You will get a response. It may not be a personal one from us, depending on the volume of emails that come in. This is February 2nd, 2015. I'm vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, and with me Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Sherry, great to be back again with you this week.
Thank you, Alan. Same with you.
It looks like you're not going to be leaving me alone for 2 or 3 weeks later this month after all. Give us, if you would, a brief update on what's going on with Australia, and we can shout and boo or whatever we need to do about that.
Well, it just had gotten to the place where it was becoming so difficult to find venues, to locations to host the venues, that and so outrageously expensive that because of the threats, the bombing threats, and the angry protests that people said that they would have there, and many of the people who had purchased tickets had said that they were bringing children. And, you know, I wasn't going to be the only speaker at these venues. There were other speakers, and so it just was getting to the place, because of the expense that the hotels were asking Stephanie and the other Australian hosts to put up somewhere between $3,500 and $4,000 a day for security, and that if anything were to happen at any of the hotels or places where we were having the events, even if it had nothing to do with the seminar, that she would be held personally responsible for it. And we just felt that the viciousness of the threats, I mean, to say that they would issue bomb threats, I mean, even if they were fake bomb threats, the entire building would have to be evacuated and would have to be investigated, which would completely disrupt the rest of the hotel or other location's business for the day. It would be it would be destructive to the seminar. It would be very scary for the attendees. And so because of all of those things and a few other things I'm really not at great liberty to discuss, it was made a determination that it was not safe for me to go. It was not safe to hold the events, and that it was in the best interest of all involved, the venue host, Stephanie, myself, the people who were going to be at the events, to just cancel the trip. And I also canceled my trip as a tourist, because a good portion of this trip was to be a vacation, you know, that with the speaking was on the weekends, and that I was going to get an opportunity to do some sightseeing on Monday through Thursday. And so that portion of the trip has been canceled as well.
Well, I guess you showed them they're going to lose all those tourist dollars now. Well, Sherry.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. I mean, I don't know.
You know, I find myself
really,
saying,
I don't think it's that as much as that. I think that it sends a message about Australia in terms of people that are going there. And I've had hundreds, literally hundreds and hundreds of emails and Facebook posts from people in Australia saying, hey, it's a small group of people down here that have been rabidly pro-vaccine and coming after you and what you represent. And it's not all of us. Please don't lump all of us Australians into the same bucket. And I have to believe that that's true.
I'm sure it is. And what's interesting, though, is how a small number of people can, you know, control or dictate conditions for others. But I think you've already gotten, in fact, the issue, the general vaccine controversy has gotten tremendous publicity it would never have gotten. So I think probably there's a net benefit here if a most unfortunate result for you in the idea that there would be any Western or first world nation where people wouldn't be free to travel and free to express their views. And what this really shows, if on the one hand a small number of aggressive people can control things for, you know, a large number or larger number of other people, that's sad. But what it reveals is how uncivilized, maybe there's a better word or phrase for it, these people are, and how willing they are to stoop to something as low as threats of violence to get their way. I think that reflects rather poorly on them. Would you agree?
I think it does, and I think there's been thousands of, literally, and I'm not exaggerating, thousands of posts on my Facebook page over the course of the last couple of, since this all broke the news on January the 4th. And many people were saying that you don't see the people who are speaking out about problems associated with vaccines or that are wanting freedom of speech and freedom of choice to decide whether or not their child should be injected with substances of known toxicity that can cause a lifetime of problems, you don't see those people going out rabidly attacking people. I mean, if they get loud at all, it's generally in self-defense because they've been so attacked. And the mainstream media has been just crazy with attacking the people who want to have freedom of choice, which kind of brings up the next topic that we need to discuss, which is all of these things that have been in the airwaves about this measles, quote-unquote, outbreak that's been going on in California that started in Disneyland, 3 weeks ago or so. Those of us that have been involved in this media and have been looking at articles and what the press says, think that this entire hysteria, this time over this measles stuff, is absolutely unprecedented. I mean, if you put in measles, vaccine, Disney into Google, you would get like 1.7 million hits. And so I think that what has happened, and they've been coming out with this vicious language of that parents that do not vaccinate their children should be put in jail, doctors who speak out against vaccines and should support a patient's right to refuse should be sanctioned by their medical board and possibly have their license withdrawn. I mean, this is just over the top. My opinion about it is that I think they are pushing this MMR vaccine so hard because Merck is about to face several federal indictments that's coming up here in court because the federal judges threw out, and Alan, you could speak to this more than I can probably, but that the Merck lawyers tried to get the cases thrown out because of the three whistleblowers and other things about the mumps fraction of the MMR vaccine, and the federal judges threw it out and would not allow them to, well, I'm probably not saying that correctly, the judges did not allow them to just toss out the case is going forward. And so there has to be something with this of why we are getting so hysterical over about 90 people that have measles. In fact, when you look back at the record over the last 5 to 15 years, the number of cases of measles in this country has been somewhere between 20 and 150 during that period of time. But we're not asking the right question. The question is then, why should people get measles? Then we should keep people from getting measles. The question is, of those people that get measles, how many of them just simply recover and then have a lifetime of immunity? And so that's what the important question is here, is are all of them dying? Well, no. Are all of them having serious side effects? Well, no. What is happening with the kids who get a fever, a cough, and a rash and lasts about 7 to 10 days and then just goes away? So the response of over-the-top viciousness that is happening in the media is just unprecedented.
Yeah, and it's a really good question, Sherry. Right before the show, I was trying to do a little quick research on some of the measles statistics, actually attempting to respond to an email discussion that some people were having about this. And one of the things that was going on in an email discussion was, well, what exactly are the figures? How do the measles deaths compare to measles vaccine deaths? And I think the measles, first of all, of course, measles, the vaccine is part of MMR, so it's really hard to pin it down to any particular vaccine when they're given three together in the same shot. And the tracking or determining the number of deaths from vaccines, there is some data available about that, but it's hard to really pin down any sort of meaningful, precise number, because even officials from the FDA and CDC, and I know the AAPS, the American Academy of Physicians and Surgeons, among other sources in recent years, have said only about 1 to 10% of serious vaccine adverse events ever even get reported in the first place. So the truth is we really have no idea. But of the data that's available, there's VAERS data, V-A-E-R-S, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. That's not really a good place to get numbers because the reports to that system are possible or suspected but not confirmed vaccine adverse events, including deaths. But there can be some, at least preliminary conclusions drawn from that data. And then we have the actual vaccine injury compensation program payouts. And even a lot of those figures technically are not for confirmed injuries and deaths. Now I'm going to seemingly contradict myself here, but let me explain. Because a lot of that is settlements. And when you settle, when the government says, look, we will go ahead and offer to pay X dollars and won't even take the case to trial and go through the whole procedure, let's just save everybody a bunch of time, which they're not going to do unless they know they would lose the case if it went forward. But part of the settlement agreement, in fact, this is typical of legal settlements generally, as far as I know, is that the defendant, the person who's accused of wrongdoing, will always throw into the mix, okay, we'll agree to pay this amount if you agree that we're not admitting to any fault here. We're just settling it so everybody can put it away and get on with their lives. But I think it is fair to say with the injury compensation payouts that even if a technical term of settlement is agreement that nobody's admitting fault, that, as I said, the government's not going to pay out money for an injury or death in a settlement or otherwise unless they know they have a losing case. They just aren't going to say, you know, we don't feel like doing this case this week. Let's just pay something. You know, it's not going to happen. So I think the injury compensation program is a point of reference, but because so much of this is never even reported, and Sherry, I've talked with several of the now approximately 130 attorneys in the U.S. who do these vaccine injury and death cases, and they will all tell you that they get calls all the time from people who have missed the statute of limitations. That is, by the time they found out about the program and started calling attorneys, it was too late for them to even file a petition. They missed a time deadline, and it has nothing to do with whether or not they have a real vaccine injury or vaccine death on their hands. That all it has to do is with a technicality. And don't let me get too far astray here, but I will say that the way the statute of limitations has been set up for the vaccine injury compensation program is unlike any other kind of personal injury statute of limitations, and in a way that unfairly excludes people from the program. The program has been designed and redesigned over the years to minimize the number of people who actually get into the program and the number of people who actually get payments. But even having said that, let me give you a couple of real quick figures, because I was looking at the data that is immediately available on the web. And over the history that this program has been paying out, which is going on 26 years now, not a full 26 years, we're in the 26th year, and the MMR deaths to date, the number is 57, so that averages out a little over 2 MMR deaths per year. Now, this could be only 1 to 10% of what's really going on, but that's the only hard figure we have. And then the number of serious injuries, and to even qualify for payout, you have to have some kind of condition that persists for at least 6 months. So these are not people who had, you know, redness at the and swelling at the site that went away in a couple of days or something like that. These are people who had sustained serious injuries. And that averaged something on the order of around, I think it was 34 per year, give or take. I was not able to find actual measles deaths before the show, but I have seen a figure quoted by other people saying that over the last 10 years or so, there haven't been any measles deaths in the United States. You know, which is, this goes to exactly what you're just saying, Sherry. Maybe people don't like to be inconvenienced with a rash and being homesick or having a child homesick for a week, and I'm sure it's not a comfortable experience. But what is the long-term result of that? Well, lifelong immunity, lower incidence, well, and this comes right out of the medical literature, lower incidence of cancer and some other chronic conditions in adulthood. And
Alan, the death rate from measles in 1963 was 3 in 10 million. The measles vaccines came into, the MMR vaccine started to be in wide use the year after that. So even way back in the 1960s, the death rate from measles was 3 in 10 million, and that's CDC data. And so that's the other thing of this entire hoopla and hysteria over a handful of kids. I mean, it's like, so 90 people got the measles. Well, there's 330 million people here in this country, and why do they always want to pull out the worst-case scenario, the worst possible thing that could happen, when in the vast majority of cases, particularly in first-world countries, it's, you know, kids could have a rash and not even know that it's measles. I remember back when I was a full-time ER doc that sometimes parents would bring their kids into the emergency room because they had a rash. And I would look at that rash and I'd think, looks a little bit like measles, or looks a little bit like rubella, you know, which is just a three-day measles, which is just a rash, and the kid's running around with watery eyes and runny nose that didn't know for sure and didn't confirm it, that would just say, you know, it's a rash. It's going to be fine. And the parents were just there because they wanted to make sure it wasn't something more serious. And, you know, when you talk to people over the age of 50, all of us had measles. And there have been a lot of posts on the Internet about back when, you know, the Brady Bunch were on television and the kids all got the measles and the doctors just diagnosed it as just an inconvenience that they were going to have to stay quarantined and stay home for a few days. And you saw them playing games and kind of being bored. And you know, there have been quite a few posts like that of people just being bored and it was just an inconvenience. And now all of a sudden, because we have this vaccine and because that we have to use it, it doesn't really matter what your family history is, what your genetics are, what your underlying conditions are. It doesn't really, none of those things are taken into consideration in this artificially contrived schedule that we march through society with and say all children at this age will receive all these vaccines on time and on this schedule, irrespective of anything else that's going on in their life or their family or their genetics. And so it's something, it's the discussion that needs to be brought to the forefront as far as I'm concerned.
I agree, and it was real interesting. I wrote an article early on in my investigation as a parent into the vaccine controversy in general, and it got the attention of a British solicitor, an attorney in Britain. And this is before I was even thinking about going to law school, which I eventually did because of my concern about the vaccine controversy, actually. But he got a hold of me because he had found this article on the Internet, and he emailed me information. He said, here's how measles was described in the medical textbooks, in the medical school medical student textbooks before the vaccine was introduced, and here's how the language was changed after the vaccine was introduced. And I assume he was talking about textbooks in Britain. But before, and I don't have it in front of me, but I'll give you the gist of it quite accurately, I believe, here, that before the vaccine was available, measles was described as a mostly benign disease with rare complications. In fact, as you know, Sherry, and I'm sure many listeners know, and this may, my impression is this was more popular in Britain than here in the States, but in both Britain and the States, a few decades ago, people would have what they call measles parties. If one kid on the block got the measles, everybody else would send their kids to go play with that kid, so they would deliberately get the measles, and then they would get it and get it over with, and then you wouldn't worry about it catching you, you know, unexpected, off guard at some point in the future. So you had some control over it that way. And that was common practice in decades past. And then the language in the textbooks was changed after the vaccine became available. Suddenly it became this terrible, awful disease that you had better not get at all costs. And it was just really interesting how radically the language, the description of the disease changed.
Do you still have them?
Apparently.
Do you still have them? I'd love to see that.
Probably not, because that would have been two or three computers ago. But if I'll tell you what, if I can find it, I'll get it to you.
Okay. All right. Okay.
But it was fascinating to see the change in language, apparently, or appearing to have been changed because of the availability of the vaccine. So So, you know, Sherry, my initial response to a lot of this hype has been just to sort of write it off as hype and just try not to get sucked into it. But, you know, Sherry, as I've thought about it more, not seen it more, because I just haven't spent a whole lot of time engaging with it. But as I've thought about it more, I've become a little more concerned, because I'm wondering if the escalation, which a lot of discourse right now is all around this whole measles thing, and I've even seen other, there are a couple of wonderful educational YouTube channels that my son and I both watch on a regular basis, really well done, and one of them in particular picked up on this measles thing and just came out with this mainstream, you know, status quo kind of thing on measles, and I was really tempted to try and contact them and say, gee, you guys are always so, you know, we love your show, you're always so careful with your scientific information, but you really lost it on this one, and here's some more information you should look at. And I thought, you know, I probably just won't even go there. But this has spread for something that last week, as you were pointing out, like, why is this such a big deal when there are children dying in automobile crashes and, you know, any number of other things we could cite where the actual harm is significantly greater but never gets into the news media? And it makes me wonder, because the overall rhetoric on the vaccine controversy in recent months has been really, really aggressive, I think stepped up, and it makes me wonder if this is all part of a more deliberate sort of promotional campaign to lead to some further kinds of changes.
Well, it makes me wonder, Alan, because, you know, this entire process is always what's happened to our country and what's happened to our government over the last 50 years is all based on the Hegelian principles, right? Problem, reaction,
right.
Solution. They create a problem, hype. They get a response from the general public, and then they create a problem with their left hand. They generate this response, and then in their right hand, they bring in a solution to the problem. Okay, so if we can't get everybody to just vaccinate, we'll just change the Constitution and make sure that all these exemptions are taken away. And it's really interesting because I'm working on a eight-part presentation for my new website that hopefully will go live here in the next couple weeks on the history that goes back and really tears apart some of the history of smallpox. And when I'm looking back at some of these original documents and reading some of these things, I've come to throw together another presentation that I'm going to put together that says, the title of it is called, Where Does This Come From? And what that is all about is that I'm seeing in the old literature, the literature from the early 1800s all the way up through the 1800s, up into the early 1900s, the same language, the same expressions, the same problems, the same everything that we are quoting and touting today is the same things that were used 150 years ago that have just absolutely been handed down through the language of what we talk about here about vaccines. It's just pretty shocking to me that we have not, today in this day and age, when we have the technology to look at the human genome, we have the technology to look at vaccine titers, we can look at family history and family genetics, we can do mitochondrial mapping, that the entire society has changed, that we could protect some of these children that we could identify that are going to have a high probability of a serious reaction, but we don't use any of these new tools, and we continue to just spout off the same tired dogma that has been reported for the last 150 years.
So what you just said, Sherry, sort of reinforces in a much more succinct and eloquent way than I was stumbling around trying to say that what's going on here may not be just sort of random pro-vaccine rhetoric, but may be rather part of a larger, very deliberate plan that's being rolled out, and maybe unplanned only in the sense that if they don't get the response they want, then they have the means to create the incidents to influence public or bias public awareness to get the or justify ultimately a preconceived plan or step. And so I think we need to be very watchful for what's going on and the implications of it. Where does this look like it's going? Because, for example, the vaccine arena has been an enormously active arena legislatively. A few months ago, there were over 100 vaccine bills pending in over 30 states, and probably 95% or more of those bills, if passed into law, would be requiring more vaccines for kids, vaccines for adults, letting more pharmacists, because some already can, administer vaccines, in some cases letting children consent to vaccines, which is blatantly unconstitutional, but already allowed in two states that I know of. Just a long list of really aggressive overstepping of constitutional and other boundaries here, which, as you noted just a few minutes ago, has been happening in other areas here in this country in recent years. And so this is all pointing in a very disturbing kind of direction. But why don't we take a minute here and do break? We're at the halfway point. And Sherry, by all means, respond to that. Or after break, please feel to respond to that. And then let's say we go to some calls. We got some people waiting on the lines there. Sound like a plan to you?
That sounds like a good plan.
All right. So you're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Attorney Alan Phillips. We're going to take a short break. Stay with us. We will be right back. And we'll get to those people who have been patiently waiting on the phone lines and have some interaction here with some listeners. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy. Real. My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called UltraRush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. UltraRush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in UltraRush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit UltraRush.com, UltraRush.com, A-L-T-E-R, Rush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with UltraRush, A-L-T-E-R, Rush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery. And our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WEBSEED.com.
We are back with the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Attorney Alan Phillips, and I want to take just a few moments here to let people know, Sherry, where they can find you on the web, drtenpenny.com, and tenpennyimc.com, and of course the Vaccine Research Library at vaccineresearchlibrary.com. Boy, there's the place to go if you want to know what's going on in the peer-reviewed published medical literature problems with vaccines. Sherry, I think you said at last count you had something on the order of 6,500 studies and growing by the week.
Yeah, growing by the week. Just... Cindy, my researcher, looks at this stuff. She plows through hundreds of journal articles every week and gleans out the things because, as you know, the vast majority of things that are published are pro-vaccine and vaccines are safe, effective, harmless, and you can't live without them. They're like better than a B12 shot at keeping you healthy. And so she goes through hundreds of articles to find out, to glean out the articles that show problems associated with vaccines and conflicts of interest and publication and money that's going in very bizarre places. And she's an amazing researcher. And so we find these things to make it easy and convenient for you. And yes, it's a subscription site. It's $99 a year, or you can pay $10 a month, and that supports what we do. It supports Cindy pulling these things out. It supports me being able to continue to do these things. And so if you want to support the cause, then the best way to do this is to support the Vaccine Research Library. It's just a, you know, one-time payment of $99 for a year. We put up new articles every single week. There's between 7 and 20 every single week. And on Tuesday, we post the free Scream of the Week on our Facebook page, which is Dr. Tenpenny on Vaccines, or Facebook.com/ vaccine info.
Great. Thanks for that additional detail. And, you know, Sherry, you and I and others in this arena do spend a lot of time and money that we're not billing for or charging for sometimes just to do the things that we do. So it's always helpful when people will help themselves, but also if they have it and can spend a little money on some of the things that we do charge for. For example, I charge for my ebook available at vaccinerights.com. It's the only document I know of anywhere that goes in-depth explaining your right to refuse vaccines in the United States in over a dozen different contexts and subcontexts, along with some more general information about how the legal systems here in the United States work, so that you can make informed decisions about exemptions and waivers. So between the two of us, Sherry, we've covered a lot of this with the research and the law, and then, of course, many other people out there helping us, and we helping them. You know, it's really going to take all of us working together to do what we do, and everybody's got a role. So let's keep the conversation going, which we do every week here on the Know Your Rights Hour. Well, let's push on over to move on over to some of these callers. We've got somebody calling in from area code 831. You are on the air. Welcome to the Know Your Rights Hour.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, glad to have you here. What can we do for you?
I actually spoke with Dr. Tenpenny a few weeks back. I booked a call with her so I could pick her brain. And, of course, when we have these sort of perspectives on vaccine, it's often received with, like, a lot of criticism. So I'm sort of doing my due diligence so that when people come to me and say, why aren't you vaccinating, that's wrong, I can give them a big perspective on all the research I've done. So one of the things I'm doing is I've booked a call with Dr. Sears, and I'm actually speaking with him tomorrow. And I was wondering, Dr. Tenpenny, what would you ask Dr. Sears if you could talk with him? I'm trying to come up with, like, a good question.
I guess I would say, I would ask him the question, since I know that in his practice, he is what they call a vaccine-friendly doctor, and so he allows patients in his practice who don't want to vaccinate. And I know that recently, when all this measles stuff posted out, he posted a fabulous article on his Facebook page, which I reposted on my Facebook page, about measles and how we should not be hysterical about measles. I know that he's judicious in the vaccines that he does give. I guess the question I would want to know is, why do you still feel they're necessary at all? Why do you still vaccinate? If you're willing to tolerate parents that don't, if you can say that sometimes they aren't necessary, we over-vaccinate, knowing the science and doing the research like you have, why would you still inject children with vaccines anyways? Why wouldn't you just not do it at all?
Okay, that's a good question. I don't want to come to him and feel like so anti-vaccine because I haven't done any of the vaccines for my 21-month-old yet. But I want to be able to tell people, look who I've talked to. I don't just go to one side. I've gone to all sides. But that is a really good question.
I personally would want to know that because I found over the years of doing this for, you know, going on 15 years now, that the vast majority of people that when they really seriously undertake this discussion, which is one of the things I recently said on an interview that I was talking on the radio to a radio show in Melbourne, Australia, that it's been my experience that parents who decide not to vaccinate have taken this decision very seriously, and they've read and they've researched and they've struggled and they've gone back and forth until after they read enough about, like, the VAERS report or the injury compensation claim, or they read the package inserts and read the ingredients and say, I don't think I want that injected into my precious little bundle, then they make the decision to not do it. It's been not very often, and I'm sure there are some, when people seriously look at all of this stuff and really seriously undertake it and just don't give it some superficial blush and then say, nope, I think all that anti-vaccine stuff and all these things that they were saying are problems associated with vaccines, I don't think any of that's true. I'm just going to go and vaccinate my kids anyways and give them every vaccine that could possibly come out. Now, I've heard a lot of trolls say that on the Internet. I don't know if it's true or not. But I think that, and even if parents do decide to vaccinate, they do it very judiciously. They'll pick out, they'll do one at a time, they'll spread them apart, they'll make sure they aren't having any reactions. They take care of their food, and I think that they're, even in some cases, kind of hyper-vigilant about health and washing their hands and, you know, doing all of these different things. So it's really quite hyper-vigilant rather than just depending on the vaccine to do its job and to keep your kid healthy and so you can feed them what you want and don't have to pay any attention to hygiene because, you know, the vaccine's going to work. In fact, that's one of the things that has been coming out for years about the Gardasil vaccine is that are we going to be giving young women a false sense of security that if they do the Gardasil vaccine that they are absolutely not going to get cancer, cervical cancer, and there is no need to do that uncomfortable, somewhat embarrassing thing called a pap smear. And knowing that even though the medical literature knows for sure there are at least 15 strains of Gardasil viruses that have been associated with cancer, and there are only 2 strains in the vaccine. So we know that that's really part of the thinking. And so I would want to know, and this is a little longer-winded than I would like, but to ask Dr. Sears, that since you really looked at this and you really have investigated it, why do you continue to do it? And I would not do it from an antagonistic standpoint, but rather like one of those cartoons with the big old question mark hanging over the top of your head. You know, it's like, I don't understand how, knowing what you know, you would still do it.
I don't want my child to get the measles. No parent wants to see their child get anything. But when I read online about the ingredients and the side effects, I'm like, well, I'd rather her not have those, and I'll take the measles over those. You know, so
let me jump in here real quick with a point, because anthroposophical medical doctors recommend only the polio and tetanus vaccines because they say you should get these other childhood diseases because they're beneficial. They confer lifelong immunity. There's research showing there's lower rates of chronic diseases as an adult. And so some people do want to get the diseases and think it's beneficial to do so. And I don't know if I'm splitting hairs here, because I think we could safely say nobody wants the inconvenience or discomfort of being sick or having to be home with a sick child. But some people very specifically and deliberately do want to get the diseases, not polio and tetanus, because there's no particular benefit to having those diseases, but the other ones, measles, mumps, chicken pox, and so forth,
benefits. But there's actually no particular benefit to the polio vaccine either, because we are trying to eliminate a virus that 98% of the time does not cause paralysis. And nature abhors a vacuum. So by eliminating those viruses, now we were opening up a gap for Coxsackie viruses, other enteroviruses that can cause acute flaccid paralysis, and so to come into the space. And so we make the assumption that all of these things that we see that are paralysis and they're virally induced are polio, and that is just simply not the case. I mean, when you see these pictures in Africa of people that are paralyzed or they're dragging a leg or something like that, and underneath of it says, this is polio, you don't know that. I mean, there are many other viruses. There are chemicals. There are pesticides. There are things that can cause damage to the neurological central nervous system that is not polio. But because we want to keep that in our brain over and over and over again, we have a multi-generational indoctrination that polio equals paralysis. They are synonyms, and they are not.
Yeah, that anthroposophical medical doctor position assumes that vaccines are safe and effective and says even though they're safe and effective, you should only get those two. And I'm certainly not suggesting that I align with that position, but my point was that for at least some of these diseases, at least some people actually do want them because they believe that there's a benefit in having the infection
well,
and going through the process.
I know for sure, and I've had, you know, Dr. Suzanne Humphries is a really good friend of mine. And in their book, Dissolving Illusions, in fact, she has a whole chapter in there about measles, and she has really dug into and investigated the whole issue about measles. And she said by eliminating measles from the endemic circulation, which the measles vaccine did decrease the incidence rate, what the trade-off was for that of us not having chickenpox and not having measles has just been disastrous for the human genome. That this did us no favors by not allowing children at the appropriate age to go through these normal childhood rites of passage illnesses. And I know that there was an article back in the 1940s in the Southern Medical Journal that said that children that had nephrotic syndrome, which is a condition in their kidneys that they leak protein, and they can leak protein terribly out to the point it can be life-threatening into their urine, that one of the treatments that they did at that point in time was that they would induce measles in these children, because part of what measles did was the very high fever, it would seal the basement membranes in the kidneys, and it would start to turn on the immune system so that the immune system would be able to tell the difference between self, me, and a foreign body, because now I have turned on the immune system and all of the cytokines. So I'm just saying that in support to what you're saying, Alan, it's not only anthroposophical medicine, but, you know, it's in the medical literature that many of these infections are symbionts, that they are good things. We have a symbiotic, mutually beneficial relationship with some of these things. And there's also been reports in the medical literature that irrespective of how high the vaccination rate is for measles, that measles recycles about every 4 to 5 years and has an uptick and an insurgence, irrespective of vaccination rates. So we've made much more of this in a very bad way than what we should.
Wow, some really, really good points there, Sherry. Well, why don't we see if we can get to these last couple of callers in the last few minutes here, and really appreciate that caller with the Dr. Sears question. Call us back. Let us know what Dr. Sears says.
Yes, I'd love to know what he had to say, and I'd love to know what
Thank
your
you
questions
so much.
Were. Yes.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Sure, thank you. We have a caller at area code, let me see, where am I here, 718. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Devorah.
Hey, Devorah.
Hi. Well, I heard something very interesting on the news today. I was listening on, it's through ABC News. They mentioned, I believe it was them, they mentioned saying that the president actually is going to speak about the measles and getting the vaccine. Everybody should vaccinate. So I heard that and I said, this is very interesting. The other thing is, has there been anything released about the numbers of vaccinated versus unvaccinated of the 102 people they are saying are part of this epidemic?
You know, there haven't been any numbers. There have been a lot of suppositions, but nothing has come out solid yet. I mean, I haven't spent that, well, let me rephrase that. There may be, but I personally haven't seen it.
Like, are they really afraid to say it's 100% vaccinated and that's it?
Of course they are.
And that's it? Because they used to say this amount or that amount.
I know, and when the mumps thing came out in Idaho, you know, a couple of years ago, that Iowa outbreak, when they found out that something like 80%, some very high number of those kids had two MMR vaccines. I mean, that was a teleconference that I sat in on and listened to Julie Gerberding, who was the head of the CDC at the time, said, you know, it doesn't seem as though the mumps vaccine is working, and then because these kids are getting it, even in these large outbreaks, and then here we have now this whistleblower who's come forward and whistleblown basically on himself and said, yes, I signed off on fraudulent data, but we knew it didn't work. And that's what part of these two federal courts are about. Now, if it's ramped up to the place, now I saw something suggestive of that about Obama saying something about, you know, we have to do more with vaccines. I know that I saw a report that Gavi, which is Bill Gates' organization, has just anteed up another $1 billion, $1 billion over the next 4 years to develop more vaccines. And I know from having a relationship with Frida and Norma, who are the powerhouses behind getting the information out about the Gardasil vaccine, that their research shows that there are 213 vaccines in the pipeline right now. So when is this going to stop? When all of the people who don't want to vaccinate their kids, how are we going to get organized and stand up against this? That's what we need to have happen. You know, I counted the other night. I think there's about 30 of us who have been in the mainstream front line out there very verbally fighting this for a long time. And we really do need to have all of the rest of the people who are coming up behind to stop allowing themselves to get bullied by all of this and figure out a way to get organized. Or, as Alan said, it's very active legislatively about how they are pushing and pushing and pushing to get us all vaccinated with all of these vaccines. And it's all about commerce. It has nothing to do with health. Nothing.
And can I say something about Dr. Sears? Hello?
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
I have a feeling you're referring to the younger one, and it's very interesting with certain of their other books how it's almost like he's a medical apologist in some ways, because I was told with the, you know, the baby book, which is a different book, that at one time they used to encourage, you know, co-sleeping with the baby, and when it was rewritten a few editions later with the younger Sears pediatricians in the family, that they all of a sudden stopped with encouraging co-sleeping. So I think in a way that he writes, the younger Dr. Sears, I'm guessing the one you're referring to, is that he's apologizing. He's like afraid to say it's really a problem. He's terrified of aluminum, but he doesn't want to say right away, no, don't do it, because I think in some ways he's afraid of losing credibility. I don't think it's necessarily anymore.
He may be trying to ride a really delicate balance between, you know, we're not going to convert pro-vaccine people all at once to what, for at least many, if not most of us, has been a long-term learning curve. Now, some people go through a learning curve over a few months or a couple of years, and, you know, I spent a couple of decades, so maybe I'm the slow one. But we're just not going to bring people fully up to speed instantly. And I don't know if this is what his strategy is, but if there is a strategy, it may be that he's trying to ride the balance. You know, maybe we get more distance overall in terms of furthering the awareness movement if there are at least some of us who try to bridge the gap between two more extreme positions, where a lot of people are just not going to make that leap from one extreme to the other extreme, but need a bridge to go across mm-hmm. over a period of time. So, you know, it could be a very positive thing when at least some people do kind of take a middle ground position, you know, tolerate mm-hmm. Not vaccinating, but try to keep their ties with the establishment as well, because they are the establishment.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just speculating, but mm-hmm. I think there's a place for it, I guess, is what I'm saying. Even if I'm, and I think Sherry, similarly, have not, you know, it's really interesting. Sherry, I think you're the one who were talking about how Mayer had said to you once, Dr. Eisenstein, that, yeah, I tell people to educate before they vaccinate, but you're braver than I am. You come right out and just tell them don't vaccinate, you know. And it was sort of funny to hear that. But yet, I think there's a place for a spectrum of positions. And part of the difficulty in this arena, perhaps, is that it has, in some respects, become so polarized. And if we can, you know, my public position has always been, insofar as any time I have been aware of and in the alternative vaccine community, that people should have the right to make a choice. And I have a very strong personal position about what I think that choice should be for me and my family and probably most other people. But I feel it's critical for people to have the right to make an informed choice, whether they agree ultimately, you know, with my personal choice or not. Because that's part of what got us to where we are, is government saying, okay, here's your choice, it's our choice, and here's what you're going to do. And would we not just be doing the exact same thing if we said, don't do what they say, do what we say? So I like to think that anybody making a truly informed choice is going to come way, way, way far from the mainstream view, but ultimately there's, you know, a potential range, and probably we should allow for a range of positions. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I got an email from someone who was actually in the healthcare arena in Australia when all this stuff was going on, and she made a very powerful statement when she said, it's okay to question as long as we don't disagree. And I think that that's kind of what, I think that that's really a powerful statement. I'll repeat that she said, when it comes to vaccines, it's okay to question as long as we don't disagree. And again, what I've been seeing, and I'll say it again, this whole issue where how important it is, and I'll give another plug to Dr. Suzanne and Roman's book, Dissolving Illusions, because you have to go back historically and look at what was said and what was created at the time when we had one vaccine, a smallpox vaccine, when we had the first mandatory vaccination laws. The second law that came into play had enforcement that put people in jail and took away their property and sold it to pay fines, until we actually had so much rioting in the streets that they passed this conscientious objector law in 1898. But at that time, I mean, there were things that were saying that during this period of time, in like the 1860s, when they would have these raging smallpox epidemics, it wasn't because the vaccine didn't work. It wasn't because it was unsafe, unsanitary, or there any problems with it. It was because not everybody was vaccinated. I mean, from the very beginning, it was blaming the unvaccinated people. You had to get smallpox vaccines in order to go to work, just like we're forcing flu shots now. I mean, the list is very long of how all of this stuff has rolled forward. So what we actually have done is not learn the lessons from history and not evolve along the scale of healthcare or medicine at all. And I think that it's time. I'm about ready to release an article called that I've been working on, and I'm just about done with it, called Time for Civility Regarding Vaccination, that we need to talk about this. It's hard work to do it, and to even though we can disagree with respect, seeking common ground as a starting point of dialogue for differences, listening past preconceptions, and teaching each other to do that. And that neither side's opinion should be ignored to be able to try to find common ground. The conversation is so strongly polarized, that we're having difficulty hearing anything. And they've got the pro-vaccine side has a louder mouth. They have billions of dollars. They have all of the media in print, television, and radio. They have a louder screaming voice. And we need to introduce civility back into this conversation.
Amen, Sherry. Of course, the lack of civility, I think, is not at all inadvertent. It's a control technique, or at least I fear that much of it probably is. So we're going to have to demand the civility, just like we have to demand transparency, demand objectivity, demand an opportunity, you know, for both sides or all sides of the issue. We have actually run out of time, Sherry, and I'm just going to apologize to those callers online. Please call back in again next week, and we will try to get better at getting to callers more quickly. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Attorney Alan Phillips. We're here on blogtalkradio.com/KnowYourRightsHour every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time. And we are proudly rebroadcast on naturalnewsradio.com Wednesday afternoons, 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific Time. We'll see you next week, folks. Thanks for being here with us.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.